You're listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast network.
Hello, 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 Miami Dolphin fans, and welcome to the Same Old Dolphin Show, part of the DolphinsTalk.com podcast network. I'm Josh Kotzker. With me today and every day is my brother from the exact same mother, Aaron the Brain. Aaron, say hello to the people.
Hello to the people.
How we doing, Brain? How you feeling?
We're feeling pretty good, aside from the fact that my microphone just came out. And so the Audacity recording that we're using, I think ultimately it's going to have to start over. So I'm letting you know that right off the top. We're dealing with some technical difficulties.
Great.
I sound different in this moment than I do like 5 minutes from now. That's the reason.
That sounds awesome. I mean, it doesn't sound awesome. It sounds like trash, but you know, this is what happens. But this is what happens when you do a live show on the internet. Sometimes you have some production related dilemmas, but we're just going to grind right through it. We're just going to grind right through it. And you know who else grinded right through it, Brain? The Kansas City Chiefs. The Kansas City Chiefs grinded right through it when they, had two field goals in their opening 9 possessions of Super Bowl 58. But did they let that stop them from putting on a great show? No. They ended up winning their 3rd Super Bowl in 4 years or 5 years. They won their 3rd Super Bowl in 5 years, their 2nd in a row. And there is perhaps another dynasty in the National Football League. So we transitioned beautifully from the New England Patriots dynasty to the Kansas City Chiefs dynasty. And of course, both of these dynasties are in the AFC. So the Dolphins, in the meantime, are still looking up. And it's not just at the Buffalo Bills that the Dolphins are looking up at. They are looking up at the Kansas City Chiefs. And some people might also argue that they're looking up at the Baltimore Ravens and the Cincinnati Bengals and perhaps the Houston Texans and the Cleveland Browns. The Dolphins are looking up. But we're not going to talk about any of those other teams right now. Talk about those Kansas City Chiefs. Brain, how'd you like the Super Bowl?
I mean, it was, as expected, a close, low-scoring game, sort of a boring game. A defensive struggle, and then it got exciting at the end, because at the end of the day, when it's a close game, it's generally, you know, it gets very tense because of the stakes and it's close. And so from that perspective, it was pretty good. It was enjoyable. I thought, you know, the first 3 quarters of the game, it's one thing that it was a defensive struggle, but it was another thing that, you know, the teams kind of came out and played sloppy football. It wasn't really like they were playing a clean game and it was just a defensive struggle. A lot of the reason why the score was as low scoring as it was because the teams were sloppy. There were missed throws. There were turnovers in the red zone. It was kind of a sloppy game. But at the end of the day, it was a close game, and it is kind of, you know, if you would have told me, and I kind of expected going into the game, close, low scoring game, even though I went in and I was thinking, you know, San Francisco is the better team, but it wouldn't shock me if Kansas City won. And the more I thought about that as the game approached, it was like, well, if it's going to be a close game, who do you trust to make the big play at the end? Patrick Mahomes or Brock Purdy? And sure enough, Patrick Mahomes wins again.
It's literally what it came down to was, you had offensive lines crumbling, and you had one quarterback that was able to somehow pull something out of his back pocket and figure it out and make the play. And then you also had a quarterback who couldn't quite do that. And I don't want to draw too many conclusions from this game, but there are a lot of people that draw similarities between Brock Purdy and Tua Tagovailoa. Quarterbacks of similar stature. They're playing in similar offensive systems. And, you know, I don't want to read too much into, like, you have some people saying that 49ers are never going to win a Super Bowl with Brock Purdy. And I'm like, buddy, if there's not a couple of big mistakes by, like, Christian McCaffrey of all people fumbles the ball, you know, it's not to say that the 49ers couldn't have won this game with Brock Purdy. And I'm also not going to say that Brock Purdy was the reason they didn't win the game.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, there's always a multitude of reasons why you win and a multitude of reasons why you lose. I would say that to say that the 49ers cannot win a Super Bowl with Brock Purdy, I think is asinine, because if they don't get an extra point block, they probably win the game.
And that again, that's one of those things where you look at it, you look at hindsight is 20/20, but if that extra point goes in, the way Kansas City plays the rest of the game is completely different. So you can't sit there and say, well, if they make that, they win the game. I don't know.
Well, I just think that was a huge factor. It's easier to play for three against a very good defense than it is to play for a touchdown. And frankly, until they scored the touchdown in overtime, they had one other touchdown in the game, and that's when they were gifted the ball inside the 20. So, like, it's not like Kansas City was driving up and down the field and finishing long scoring drives. San Francisco was doing what they needed to do. I mean, if you want to break it down to a couple plays, well, you could say, well, if Kansas City or if San Francisco doesn't muff a punt, you know, does Kansas City win? If they don't fumble inside the red, if Brock Purdy doesn't severely overthrow Deebo Samuel, or Brendan Ayuk earlier in the game on would-be touchdown passes, is it a different result? There's a lot of reasons why they won or lost. Brock Purdy was part of the reason why they lost. But at the end of the day, they could have very easily won that game with Brock Purdy at quarterback. And frankly, I mean, some of the throws that Brock Purdy made and missed, some of the throws that Brock Purdy missed are throws that, frankly, Tua doesn't miss.
Yeah, I agree with that.
If you want to draw that comparison, if San Francisco can get to the Super Bowl, be in overtime with the lead in the Super Bowl, arguably could have won in regulation, why can't the Dolphins win with Tua? The difference is that San Francisco is a much better team. And that's my takeaway out of it, is that you look at those two teams and you see complete football teams. You see teams that are strong in the trenches. And you don't see their quarterbacks just with, like, you know, needing to get rid of the ball in 2.5 seconds or they're screwed.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I also, you know, I'm one of those guys who's like, I'm not going to say let's have huge big picture takeaways based on the result of one football game. Because, again, the NFL is the king of people overreacting to small sample sizes, and reacting to what happened within the game of the Super Bowl is reacting to a one game sample size. So, yes, is it a one-off game to determine the NFL champion? Sure. But the teams that got there for a lot of different reasons. And I think you saw in the game why both of those teams made it to that point. And I think what's difficult about the result of that game and watching that game, what is difficult is that you had the Kansas City Chiefs winning their third Super Bowl in 5 seasons, and this was by far the worst version of the Kansas City Chiefs. And they still, despite looking like a mediocre football team for a lot of the regular season, turned it on in the playoffs when it mattered most, got to the Super Bowl, looked like they had reverted back to the team that they were for most of the regular season in the first half of that Super Bowl, and then still turned it around and won it all. A lot of the reason for that is that they have an all-time quarterback. I mean, I'm not going to be shy about saying that Patrick Mahomes is perhaps the best quarterback in the history of the game. I know that you'll have some people that say, well, you can't say that yet because he doesn't have the career numbers of Tom Brady. And I'm like, you know what? That's fine if that's the argument that you want to make. But this guy's what, been in the year as a starting quarterback for 6 years, and he's got 3 Super Bowls already, 6 consecutive AFC championship game appearances. That guy has the clutch gene that Tom Brady had, but he also has an elite set of tools that Tom Brady never had. And that is the guy that the Dolphins are going to have to beat at some point down the line if Dolphins are ever going to take the step of trying to reach the top of the mountain. They're going to have to figure out a way not just to get through the Buffalo Bills and Josh Allen, but they're also going to at some point have to figure out how to slay the dragon that is Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. And that is something that you look at and you stand from a distance and you go, man, that's going to be tough. But I think the big thing that you can, there's 2 big things that I think you can say in terms of how do you beat the Kansas City Chiefs. And the way that you beat the Kansas City Chiefs is that you have to take advantage of every opportunity that you get to put points on the board. I mean, for all of San Francisco's, I mean, you might call it dominance in the first half, but as well as San Francisco played in the first half of that game, they only ever led by 10 points. And they let Kansas City hang around, and Kansas City said, oh, you're going to let us hang around? Then we'll be more than happy to come back and take this game. At some point down the line, the Miami Dolphins are going to have to go in and figure out a way to try to slow down the Kansas City Chiefs while at the same time being able to put up points basically every time they get the football. And that's kind of the situation that you're looking at. I mean, against this Chiefs team. And again, This was the worst version of the Chiefs team. This is a Chiefs team that's going to have a lot of money to spend to lock up key players and to bring in key free agents. And on top of all of that, this is a Kansas City team that has had lots of draft capital and has consistently hit on it. Couldn't relate.
Well, yeah, that's why they're successful. That's how you do a rebuild. The thing is, when you have a great quarterback, you can mask a lot of things.
Sure.
And so it's kind of similar to what the Patriots did with Brady. It's just kind of opposite. When Tom Brady started his dynasty and won his first 3 Super Bowls, he was on his rookie deal and he was sort of a game manager quarterback, but he was playing with a great defense, arguably consistently a top 5 defense, and a defense that even the best offenses in the league would struggle against. And Tom Brady did enough on offense to win football games because of that. And then they went a long time without winning another Super Bowl. They went like almost a decade.
Yep, in between.
But between like his 3 wins and then 3 more wins. And the difference in the after the first 3 Super Bowl victories was all those players on defense either got old or got too expensive. They had the Patriot way. They're not going to spend a bunch of money to keep these guys. And so they rebuilt and they put a bunch of assets onto the offensive side of the ball. And then they had great offenses. Frankly, when they had the great offenses, like the peak offenses, they actually didn't win Super Bowls. They'd get to the Super Bowl and lose to the Giants. And then they kind of rebuilt it, but they stayed relevant the entire time, no matter what they had around Brady. They stayed relevant and in the picture because of Tom Brady. And that's the situation with the Chiefs, is that, look, when Mahomes came into this league, he had great weapons around him. Awesome offensive line, Tyreek Hill, good running game, good, you know, great weapons all over the field. And he, you know, obviously he was the engine. He did great things there. But they won in spite of not having a great defense. And these, you know, and then this year, and really last year too, but really this year, they had a very underwhelming offense because they've been retooling the offensive line. Every year they're losing wide receivers. Their wide receiver core was much maligned all year. And they were kind of figuring it out as the season went on, and they completely had to reinvent themselves. But the thing is, they were able to reinvent themselves because they drafted so well on the defensive side of the ball over the last couple of years that they built a dominant defense. And now they have a dominant defense and they have Patrick Mahomes. So even when the offense isn't amazing, the defense is going to keep them in the games. And if you've got a close game in the fourth quarter, Patrick Mahomes is going to do Patrick Mahomes things. And then they've got, you know, they've got the money to go out now and add players in free agency. This was absolutely supposed to be the step back year. And this was supposed to be the year to beat the Chiefs. And everybody else just kind of dropped the ball, and Patrick Mahomes stepped up. Now, as far as your assessment of the Dolphins need to figure out how to beat the Chiefs, yeah, maybe. Maybe they have. But I think that's not how you build this thing, because there's a very realistic chance that you don't even necessarily have to beat the Chiefs to get to the Super Bowl.
Well, sure.
You probably have to beat the Bills, though, because
you got to beat them at least once.
You got to win the division. So I think if you're building the team to, I don't think you can build the team to beat a specific team.
No,
I just don't think you could do that. I think you have to look at the pieces that you have. You have to find a pathway that makes the most sense to get you where you want to be with the pieces that you're going to go with. And then you figure it out. I think if you get too caught up in how are you going to beat the Chiefs, like, I don't even know what the answer to that is, because frankly, the Chiefs have the capability of being a downright perfect team next season. Yeah, if they go out and spend a bunch of money and get weapons around Patrick Mahomes with a young defense that's full of guys that are on rookie deals, like, Kansas City could be an absolute monster powerhouse next year. And frankly, we'll get into this in a second. I don't think the Dolphins are particularly close to being a Super Bowl team in 2024.
Yeah, obviously you don't build your team to be able to beat one other team, because then what ends up happening is you manage to beat that team, but that ends up not being the team that you actually needed to beat, or you were built particularly well to beat that team, but then you don't get to face them, or something along those lines. But and as iDog says in the comments on YouTube, shout out to everybody watching on the Dolphins Talk YouTube, by the way. The Dolphins need to figure out how to win a playoff game first, which is accurate.
Right, but they just had a chance to win a playoff game, but they couldn't figure out how to beat the Chiefs.
So there we go. So
and
here
last
we are.
Year, they couldn't figure out how to beat the Bills.
It's a full circle. It's a full circle thing. So there's a lot of retooling that is going to need to happen, and we're going to have plenty of time to think about this and pray on this and all of that. But, Brian, that was Super Bowl 58, right?
Was it 57 or 58?
That was 58. Wasn't that 58?
I'm losing
track. Pretty sure it was 58. Regardless, Brain, you see this hat that I'm wearing?
Yeah.
You see what that says?
Hang on a second.
This is a vintage
Super Bowl 17.
This is a vintage Super Bowl 17 hat. Now, you know what is significant about Super Bowl 17?
Was that the last time that the Dolphins were in the Super Bowl?
That is the last time the Miami Dolphins were in the Super Bowl. It was a long time ago. So that's
41 years.
Yeah. It's a long time since the Dolphins have been in the Super Bowl. And I don't know that they are going to be there again soon. Maybe they will. I guess things could happen. Things could always break the right way. They certainly did not break the right way this past season. But the fact of the matter is the Dolphins are going to need to retool some things. And one of the questions that the Dolphins are going to have in terms of being able to retool to make it to the Super Bowl, they've got a question to answer about what they want to do with Andrew Van Ginkel. And that's what we're going to spend the rest of this episode talking about. But before we do that, a reminder to you. If you have not done so already, make sure you are following us on X, which you can find at twitter.com.
Got a fact check here.
Ah, that's right. It was Super Bowl 19 was the Dolphins game against the 49ers. This is my 17 hat from when they faced the Washington old, the other team, Washington. We'll just say Washington. They were called the Redskins at the time. Now they're the Commanders. At any rate, a reminder to you, if you're not doing so already, follow us on X, which you can find at twitter.com. I'm at Amplified Iraq. He's at Aaron the Brain. The show is at Same Old Dolphins. You can also follow me and Same Old Dolphins on Blue Sky, which is now open to everybody. So Twitter, which is pretty much a dumpster fire most of the time, if you're looking for a much more pleasant tweeting experience, I strongly suggest Blue Sky, so go check that out. You don't even need an invite code anymore, so you just head over there, follow me at Amplified Rock. Additionally, you should download, rate, review, and subscribe to the Same Old Dolphin Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, everywhere you get your podcast. You should subscribe to the Dolphins Talk YouTube channel. If you're watching on the Dolphins Talk YouTube channel right now, smash that thumbs up button, would you? Leave us a comment so people know that you're watching. We appreciate it very much. Subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. We're going to have some, we just want to get some subscribers to the channel because we got a lot more good content coming your way all off season long. And finally, of course, make sure you're visiting DolphinsTalk.com each and every day. It's your one-stop shop for all things Miami Dolphins all off season long. And of course, a shout out to everybody watching on the I'm a Miami Dolphin Fan Facebook page. What's up, everybody? Good to see you. Thanks for joining us. Brain, Andrew Van Ginkel. This is a guy who really has come into his own the past couple of years. After his rookie deal ended, Dolphins signed him to a one-year deal this past year after he flirted with possibly heading to New England, decided to stick around in Miami on a one-year deal, and really had another very, very good season, and I think earned himself some money, particularly with the injuries to Jalen Phillips and Bradley Chubb. I thought he really came into his own. Now, it's safe to say that he has really come into his own as an outside linebacker on the occasion where he was inexplicably put in to play in the middle. He struggled a bit. But really, when he was put in his natural position, this was a guy who delivered. And he's a guy that I think a lot of people in the Miami Dolphins orbit really like. The problem is that I think the Miami Dolphins may have a hard time keeping him around. I think, and I'll hand it over to you in just a second, Brent, because I think Andrew Van Ginkel is going to be, or has the potential to be, a very important piece on this Dolphins defense in 2024, especially considering we don't know whether or not Jalen Phillips and Bradley Chubb are going to be ready to go at the start of the season. Phillips might be. Chubb probably won't be. And then when they finally are ready, we have no idea what kind of condition they're going to be in and how, you know, how impactful they're going to be. So having a guy like Andrew Van Ginkel around would be very valuable. The problem is, Brain, that Andrew Van Ginkel, according to some rumors, is said to be looking for about $10 million per year. And as much as I like Andrew Van Ginkel, given the other needs that the Dolphins have, I'm having a really hard time seeing how the Dolphins can cough up $10 million a year to keep Andrew Van Ginkle around, unless they can, you know, Stephen Ross wants to write him a big check and the Dolphins can, you know, do some wacky cap manipulation on it. But otherwise, my feeling is that as much as I would like Andrew Van Ginkle to stick around, I think it's going to be a very difficult thing for the Dolphins to accomplish.
Yeah, so I mean, it comes down to how much you prioritize him, because they could give him $10 million a year if they wanted to give him $10 million a year. I mean, we're talking about a Tua extension. We're talking about potentially Christian Wilkins being extended. We're talking about decisions that have to be made with Robert Hunt and with Connor Williams. And not to mention, you know, bringing back other guys on like one-year deals, signing rookie classes and everything. So it's just like, you could do it. You could bring back Andrew Van Ginkle, but what you're not going to sign everybody. And that's where it kind of gets dicey is, all right, if you sign Andrew Van Ginkle, like who are you not signing? And it's not like I did the exercise on the last show of, you know, the Dolphins can make a few cap maneuvers that are like no brainer cap maneuvers. And they've got $40 million in cap space. Even before, or they've got like $27 million in cap space, even before we talk about a Tua extension. And even before we get into like June 1st cut of, you know, potentially cutting, Xavien Howard and saving $10 million, or cutting Jason Sanders and saving a few million dollars. Like there are moves that the Dolphins can make, and then you can structure salaries where if you wanted to, you can absolutely bring back all of these guys. But at some point in the near future, you know, if you do that with all of the contracts, their cap numbers are going to get big, and you've got other impending moves that need to be made over the next couple of years. Javon Holland, Jalen Phillips, Jalen Waddle. There are big moves to be made, you know, with guys that are going to be, you know, that are going to need to be paid big time dollars. So you have to make the decision, where on that pecking order does Andrew Van Ginkle lie? And that's where I struggle with paying Andrew Van Ginkle, because Andrew Van Ginkle can be a very important piece to a very, very good defense as a third edge rusher, because that's where he's at his best. Because let's face it, when the Dolphins defense was at its best, you had Bradley Chubb and you had Jalen Phillips, and then you had Andrew Van Ginkle as your third edge. And it gives you a bit of versatility. It also allows you to him to be a rotational piece, but he's not great in run defense because he's just not big. He's not great in pass coverage, although he did show, you know, an ability to do it a little bit under Vic Fangio's defense. Now, well, I think part of it is, well, what kind of defense are you going to run with the new defensive coordinator? If you're going to be blitzing a ton, well, then I can sort of make a case. Well, here's a great blitzing edge rusher. But at the same time, let's not forget that the Dolphins brought Andrew Van Ginkle back on a one-year deal to be a blitzing rotational edge defender, and they paid him $2.65 million to do it. Now, are you always going to get a guy as good as Andrew Van Ginkle for $2.65 million? No. But you could probably get somebody as good as Andrew Van Ginkle for like $4 or $5 million, or you could, you know, real novel idea here, start drafting an edge defender again so that you've got somebody under a rookie deal that can do it. Because at the end of the day, if you're going to pay Andrew Van Ginkle, then are you going to pay Jalen Phillips in a couple of years? Because Jalen Phillips and Bradley Chubb's already getting paid, and they're restructuring his deals. So you can't really get out of that contract. So Bradley Chubb is here with all the draft capital they gave up to get him, with the money that they paid him, with the restructuring of his contract to try to make these things work. Bradley Chubb's not going anywhere. So you're either going to decide here in a year or two to pay Jalen Phillips, or you're going to pay Andrew Van Ginkle. And I'm going to pay. Now, granted, the injury to Jalen Phillips kind of clouds things a little bit. But assuming Jalen Phillips gets healthy, I'm paying Jalen Phillips every day of the week and twice on Friday, overpaying Andrew Van Ginkle. And that's just the way it is. So I just think it comes down to where in the pecking order, where you prioritize. We all love Andrew Van Ginkle, but this isn't just a Dolphins thing. This is like an every fan base thing. Every fan base has a guy on their team that they fall in love with partially because they don't make very much money, because they are a really good player that does not make very much money. And what oftentimes will happen is that eventually that player is going to be due a contract and he's going to get a big raise and that team will pay him. And a couple years later, everybody who loved him, now this guy becomes a pariah because he's overpaid. Don't let that happen to Andrew Van Ginkle. Andrew Van Ginkle deserves to get paid. He deserves to get $10 million. Don't let me tell you that Andrew Van Ginkle does not deserve that. He absolutely does. That's right around the level that he should be, somewhere in that like $9 to $11 million per year. The problem is that the Dolphins aren't in a position to pay him that. So he's either going to go to a bad team that wants to like overpay because they're trying to be competitive and do the thing that the Dolphins have done the last 20 years, which is try to overpay somebody in free agency to get their team from being a bad team to a playoff team, or he's going to go to a team that is a piece away and can afford to bring him in on that contract, and he's going to be a major part of a team that makes a deep run.
Van Ginkle has expressed the desire to stay in Miami. I wouldn't read a whole lot into that because, of course, he would like to stay in Miami. This is where he lives. And if given the choice to stay in Miami and living in a state where there's no state income tax and, you know, having all the upheaval of moving and doing all of that, obviously he would prefer to stay where he is. But he is also, in the same breath where he was saying that he would love to stay with the Dolphins, he's saying, but it's a business and the business is going to take him where he's going to get paid. I mean, is it outside the realm of possibility that he takes a discount to stay with the Dolphins? I mean, it's not entirely, but I would be surprised.
He's 28.
Yeah. I mean, this is a guy, he's got his whole career in front. He is at the window where this is the contract. This is the contract for him that he is going to live off of for the rest of his life. This is the deal. This is the biggest contract that he's ever going to sign. He's going to sign this contract. It's going to happen right now. So is there a chance that he might take slightly less to stay with the Dolphins? It's not impossible, but I wouldn't hold my breath expecting it. I think he's going to go where the money is, and his agent is going to encourage him to do the same. I think Andrew Van Ginkle is the guy that you look at from the Miami Dolphins and you go, does it make sense for the Dolphins to sign him to a big contract? Or are the Dolphins going to look to a guy like, you know, Bud Dupree and be like, I can get you on a shorter term, lower cost deal to come in and do a comparable job to that role that Van Ginkle was going to do? I think the Dolphins might be willing to spend a little bit in the position especially because of those injuries to Phillips and Chubb. But I think they might be willing to spend, as you suggested, Brain, maybe closer to $4 or $5 million over the course of a short-term year, a short-term contract, a one-year deal on a veteran guy who's out there. And they're going to hope that they can get the exact right hire and that they can have that guy who can come in and be probably one of those focal point players in the first part of the season until Phillips and Chubb start to round back into health. And then that person can take on more of a, you know, tertiary role, that third edge defender kind of role that Van Ginkle fulfilled before. But that's kind of where I see it. This is like Van Ginkle is, for me, the poster boy for your choices. Lock a guy up who has been with your team for some time. And this is the opportunity where you can overpay for a player who deserves the money, but you can sign him to that contract and have that hinder you, or you can let him go and try to find a cheaper option short term to, to fill that role for now until you're able to bring somebody back up through the system. And I think based on what the Dolphins need to do, not just in 2024, but as you suggested in 25 and 26, just doesn't make a lot of sense to sign him to a big money contract at this point in time.
Yeah, well, and that's the other piece of this, is that to me, the main reason that you would sign Andrew Van Ginkle is because you're concerned about Bradley Chubb and Jalen Phillips coming off of injuries. But the problem is, you're not giving him a one-year deal. You're like, I don't know, he wouldn't take a one-year deal at that amount, and a one-year deal at that amount would not even work for the Dolphins, because it'd be a bad cap maneuver. If you don't give out a long-term contract because you're trying to put a Band-Aid on something, unless you're really believing that you're going to win the Super Bowl in 2024 and that you can't do it without Andrew Van Ginkle. And I'm going to tell you two things. Number one, the Dolphins ain't winning the Super Bowl in 2024. And number two, Andrew Van Ginkle ain't going to be the reason why they don't win it. And if they did by some miracle win in 2024, Andrew Van Ginkle wouldn't be the reason that they won it. So it's just not a prudent move. It would be a very win now move for a team that, let's face it, like this team needs so much to go right for them to even have a shot next year, because we're talking about all these moves that the Dolphins need to make with players that are their best players. And we're sitting here talking about how they're not going to be able to bring all of their best players back. It's looking increasingly more likely that, we got to wait and see what happens, but like Christian Wilkins might not be back. You think your defense is going to be as good without Christian Wilkins? We're talking about potentially cutting Xavien Howard as a cap casualty. For all the things that have been said about Xavien Howard and all the money that he's been making, and as much as he's dropped off, he was by far your second best corner last year. Without Xavien Howard, you would have Eli Apple playing every single game and getting almost every single snap. Eli Apple and Kader Kohu. You really feel good about Cam Smith? So how are you going to bounce back from that if you're going to get rid of Xavien Howard? We're talking about getting rid of Jerome Baker as a cap casualty. You think you're just going to easily replace him? You got a bunch of faith in Channing Tindall, who can't even get on the field? Like, this team is going to take a step back. The offensive line, people are saying, well, you can't bring back everybody on the offensive line. Frankly, I would bring back everybody on the offensive line, and I'd draft a guy, because I'd sit here and I'd say, the defense, it's going to be a work in progress. We got to retool. We got to rebuild it over the next couple of years. But what I'm doing is I'm building everything to be amazing on the offensive side of the ball while I figure it out on defense. Because I know in today's league, if you have a truly elite offensive line and great weapons, you could have a truly elite offense, and that could be good enough to get you to the Super Bowl. But piecing things together and trying to hang on to an Andrew Van Ginkle while the rest of your defense is falling apart, that's not really going to make much of a difference. And in the meantime, you're sacrificing from other places that you could be spending money. So I think what the Dolphins need to do this offseason, and I've said this is the theme of the offseason for me, is this offseason is about identifying which of these players are your foundational pieces that you want to build around, that you cannot afford to lose when you build a winning window out for another 2, 3, 4 years. But it's not about winning in 2024, because this team wasn't even good enough to make a playoff game. And I know, or to win a playoff game. And I know they had injuries, and that's part of it. If the injuries broke a different way, they might have won a playoff game. But they were clearly outclassed by the three best teams in the AFC this year, which is Buffalo, Kansas City, and Baltimore. They're not getting better than those teams magically next year by losing their best players. Even if they take steps and Tua takes a step in the offense and Mike McDaniel has some maturity in his play calling, this team is not getting better by losing their best players. And their pathway is going to be shorter because they're going to have less depth because they haven't had any draft picks in the last 2 years. So they need to come to the realization that 2024 is not the year. 2024 is the year to retool, but while keeping your locking up your foundational pieces. Because of that, that's why I'm not re-signing a guy like Andrew Van Ginkle, because at the end of the day, your third best pass rusher is not a foundational piece.
So there it is. That's the Andrew Van Ginkle episode. Brain, who are we talking about next week?
I know a lot of people think that we shouldn't do a show on this next guy, but I think there's compelling arguments to be made as to what the Dolphins should or should not do with Xavien Howard.
Oh, the Xavien Howard episode. This might be a good episode for us to see if we can get Charlie Touche on.
Yeah.
Charlie is not an Xavien Howard lover. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can get Charlie on from Go Time Dolphins. Shout out to Charlie and Kadeem. Happy belated birthday to Charlie, by the way. My guy.
Yeah, happy birthday to Charlie. And
it was his birthday on Super Bowl Sunday. The Dolphins were supposed to be giving him a birthday present, but they were not.
Well, that's because his number two ranked quarterback going into the season just wasn't the number two ranked quarterback at the end of the season.
Yikes. There it is. My goodness. So you want to do an episode about Xavien Howard next week? That may just be the show that we do. Either way, we will be back guaranteed next week talking about a player for the Miami Dolphins and what the Dolphins should do. We'll also be discussing any news that should break between now and then. Maybe the Dolphins re-sign Tua Tagovailoa. They extend him. There's been some, I wouldn't call it news on this front, but let's just say the negotiating has begun. As we had reports out that were very clearly from the Tagovailoa camp that Tua should be getting a contract in line with Joe Burrow's contract.
You don't want to talk about that?
What's that?
You don't want to talk about that?
I mean, we can talk about it. It's Tua's camp is putting out the messaging that they think that Tua has an argument to be paid a contract that is even with or greater than Joe Burrow's. And it's like, that's just negotiating. That's just positioning. That's all it is. It's his camp putting out a message to say, this is what our guy wants. This is what we think that he is worth. And the Dolphins are going to come in. And quite frankly, I think the fact that that's, you know, where they're coming in is not a surprise. And that actually bodes well for the Dolphins to probably end up having a contract that's going to arrive in the ballpark where you would have expected it to arrive anyway. But
I agree that, yeah, they're not going to pay him $55 million or more per year. But because that's where they're coming in, I think it dispels the notion that they're going to somehow get him on a discount.
Sure.
Yeah, and so what that means is I think the floor was kind of where I was aiming was in that, like, I think $40 million was a pipe dream to give him the Daniel Jones contract. I didn't think that was realistic at all. But I think $45 million per, maybe you get a four-year deal at, like, you know, $180 million or something. I thought it was reasonable. But that's probably the floor. That's probably where Chris Greer comes in after Tua's representation comes in at $55 million. He comes in at $45 million. I think this thing's going to end probably somewhere along the lines of the Herbert and Kyler Murray deals, meaning he's going to get a fifth year. He's going to get the guaranteed money, and he's going to end up around $51, $52 million. Yeah. Per annual per year. I think it is more than you want to pay. I'd still extend him because I don't think you have a choice. And I think at this point, you just kind of like the way this thing has been built and the way like the way this thing can fall apart very easily in a few years. You're in your winning window. At this point, this is Chris Greer's job is Tua. So I think you, and it's Mike McDaniel's job as well. I think you just, Mike, you know, from Dolphins Talk said it the best. He said, their wagons are hitched to Tua.
Yep.
And so at this point, you give him the contract. And if he's great, you do the restructures and then you've got extensions and it won't kill you.
Yep.
Because he's still, because he's a great quarterback and you've got him locked up long term.
I think,
if he isn't great, then you're going to have to blow the whole thing up in 3 years.
Yeah.
And frankly, if you get rid of Tua and you bring in some other quarterback, you're probably going to have to blow the thing up in 3 years anyway, because you're not really having the continuity on offense and you're not really building this thing, because you're giving, to sign another quarterback, you're going to give him a shorter term deal that's going to eat up much more of your cap room, and you're still not getting your long term answer. Your best shot at a long term answer, whether you like it or not, at this point is Tua, unless, you know, something magic happens. Like you end up with this dream scenario where somebody falls into your lap or you draft somebody late and you happen to find yourself the next time Tom Brady, and then you're able to trade Tua for, you know, at that point, if you've got the next Tom Brady, you don't care if you trade Tua for a second round pick or a third round pick, because you've got your quarterback. But until you have that quarterback, you just got to try to win with Tua. So
yeah, that's what it is.
They're going to extend him. And that's the thing, is that Tua has all the leverage. So
sure,
good for him.
But
he should be asking.
I think the difference is here, Brain. I think the big thing here is that I think where that argument is going to figure, that negotiation is going to hinge on, is how much money the Dolphins are going to guarantee him. Because I think if I'm the Dolphins, I think you can make an argument for the Miami Dolphins putting a deal together for Tua to arrive at, I'll even say it, you could have a deal where Tua could arrive at somewhere between $50 and $55 million a year, but that is going to have to be loaded with incentives, and it's going to have to be, the Dolphins are going to have to protect themselves. The Dolphins are not going to guarantee that kind of contract because of the fact that he's only been able to stay healthy once for one full season. And the Dolphins are going to load up that contract with those kind of incentives and be like, if you want to get there, if you can stay healthy, then fine. Then, you know, we can get you there when with bonuses, because you've played a certain number of games and you've hit a certain number of thresholds. You want to hold up this season that you had as this incredible season. Well, then let's put your money where your mouth is. Let's sign you up for those incentives. You can do it again, and then you can get that money and that kind of thing. And I think that's where those negotiations are really going to take place. But we'll let all of that play out here in the weeks to come, because I have a feeling there's going to be a lot more positioning from both sides on that contract. The big thing is, I guess, that they said that both sides are interested in making a deal happen quickly. And obviously, you know why the Dolphins have that, you know, the quicker they have it, the more money they have to play with. But
exactly. That's the whole thing, is that all of the leverage is on Tua's side. You look at Kyler Murray's contract with $160 million guaranteed. You look at Justin Herbert's contract with like $216 million guaranteed. Like, you could talk all you want about how, like, we want to lowball and we're not going to guarantee and we're going to put all these incentives. Good luck getting, when you're sitting there saying, we need to make this deal happen quick so that we can figure out all of the other moves that we need to make, and Tua's representation is looking at all these other guys that don't have the accolades that he does over the last two seasons, getting paid $160 million guaranteed. Good luck getting Tua for less than $150 million guaranteed. Good luck getting him for less than $160 million guaranteed, because he's probably going to get upwards of about $170, $180 million guaranteed. And the fan base is going to lose their mind. It's going to happen, because at the end of the day, the Dolphins have no leverage because they have not built this thing in a sustainable way. They've built this thing in a way where if they don't sign Tua to an extension, they've got to get rid of like half of their expected free agents.
Yeah.
And then they're going to be in a complete rebuild and then still have to figure out who their quarterback is the following year.
Yeah.
So there would be, they're screwed. There's
nothing,
have to extend
nothing worse. Nothing worse than being in the middle of a rebuild in the middle of a competitive window. That would be a real disaster for the Dolphins. So we're going to keep an eye on this as the weeks unfold, and if anything should bleed into whatever topic of conversation we're going to have, then it'll bleed in. But we've still got to talk Xavien Howard. We've still got to talk a little bit about Jerome Baker. Well, who else?
Well, I think what we're going to do is that next week is going to be Xavien Howard, and then we're going to do a show just for the other guys. So, I mean, we may just combine Xavien Howard and Jerome Baker, because they're kind of the same situation where
these are
players that if the Dolphins bring them back are starters on their roster, and the Dolphins are basically worse off in 2024 if they do bring them back, but can save a lot of money by, you know, jettisoning them. And then, you know, the rest of the guys would be like, you know, the other guys with expiring deals, like your Brandon Joneses, your Deshaun Elliotts, your Kendall Lambs, your Robert Jones, the guys that the Dolphins are going to be like, who's going to be brought back on like a 1 or 2 year deal, your Duke Rileys of the world, to fill out the rest of this roster so that you're not having to fill it out, you know, with other pricier free agents from other teams.
So what the brain is trying to say here is that we're going to still be with you. The regulars, the football is over. The NFL season is over. But we're going to keep coming to you every week, leading you up to free agency. And we'll take you through free agency. We'll be with you up to the draft. And if it's not us, you got the rest of the crew here at Dolphins Talk. So make sure you're subscribed to the Dolphins Talk YouTube channel. That's the big thing. Smash that thumbs up button, hit subscribe, turn on notifications so you're notified every time we go live. Leave us a comment. What do you want to do with Andrew Van Ginkle? Let us know in the comments. What do you think Tua's contract should look like? Let us know in the comments. Do you think the Dolphins should just let Tua go, plan his fifth year option? Let us know. Put it in the comments. Tell us what you think. Either way, we appreciate each and every one of you for sticking with us all through the 2023 season. We're now on to 2024. We're into the offseason. The Miami Dolphins social media team put a video out to say that we're ready for next season. We're getting ready now. And interestingly enough, Teron Armstead featured prominently at one point in that little video that they put out. So that maybe, if you're reading between the lines, bodes well that he's going to be sticking around for this next season. Either way, we're going to be with you all through the off season and all the way leading up to the start of the 2024 season. So thanks for being with us here on the Same Old Dolphin Show. We appreciate you. We'll talk to you next time. In the meantime, take care of yourselves and each other. And as always, go Dolphins!
Get ready. Get ready to lose your minds, because Tua is going to get like $170, $180 million guaranteed.